Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Monday said that there was a technical failure after an Israeli strike that local health officials say killed at least 45 Palestinians in the southern Gaza city of Rafah late Sunday. VOA's Jeff Custer.
Speaking at the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, Monday, Netanyahu said Israel is investigating the strike. The reports say started a massive fire that also injured dozens. Netanyahu said Israel had evacuated about a million non-involved civilians before what he called a tragic mistake. Israel has seen surging criticism of its war against Hamas, even from its strongest allies. Speaking following a meeting of the European Union foreign ministers in Geneva Monday, EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell denounced the attack and said the UN's top court order for a ceasefire should be respected.
I condemn this in the stronger terms, and these attacks take place immediately after the International Court of Justice ordered it to stop all military activities in Gaza.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
Meanwhile, hundreds marched in Tunis on Monday, condemning the Israeli strike on Rafah, which, according to Gaza authorities, killed 45 Palestinians and wounded dozens. Protesters waved Palestinian flags and chanted slogans as they gathered outside the French embassy in the capital. The attack on the tent camp prompted an outcry from global leaders who urged the implementation of a world court order to halt Israel's assault. A report by the United Nations nuclear watchdog says that Iran has further increased its stockpile of uranium enriched to near weapons-grade levels. Confidential report seen by the Associated Press on Monday says Iran now has 142.1 kilograms or about 313.2 pounds of uranium enriched up to 60%, an increase since the previous report in February. This is VOA News. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports on Ukraine's appeal for air defense systems in its war with Russia.
Volodymyr Zelensky has secured from Spain a pledge of additional air defense missiles to help in its fight against Russia. Zelensky says Russia launches about 3,000 bombs every month at Ukraine in the third year of the war. Ukraine still urgently needs another seven U.S.-made Patriot air defense systems to stop Russia from hitting key targets. Weekend Russian aerial bombs hit a construction supply store and a mall in the city of Kharkiv, causing extensive damage and blazes that had to be battled. There were dozens of casualties and injuries. I'm Norman Hall.
North Korea says its attempt to put another spy satellite into orbit has failed. State media said the rocket carrying the satellite exploded after liftoff Monday evening due to a suspected engine problem. The failed launch came hours after leaders of South Korea, China, and Japan met in Seoul in their first trilateral meeting in more than 4 years. It's highly unusual for North Korea to take provocative action when its major ally, China, is engaged in high-level diplomacy in the region. The Papua New Guinea government said more than 2,000 people are believed to have been buried alive in a landslide in the South Pacific island nation. The disaster struck after the side of a mountain came down early Friday morning when the village was asleep. The settlement is a restive and remote area to the interior of the poor rural nation off the northern east coast of Australia, making search and rescue efforts complicated and hazardous. The scale of the disaster, local feuds, and the lack of heavy equipment are also factors. AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports on Canadian evacuees heading home after wildfire evacuation orders end.
Residents in the western Canadian city of Fort Nelson, British Columbia, were given permission to return home after more than 4,700 people were evacuated for more than 2 weeks due to wildfires. They were forced to leave their homes on May 10th when strong winds pushed the Parker Lake wildfire within a few miles of the town. The Wildfire Service says that rain over the weekend helped firefighters and that the 47-square-mile fire was not expected to grow. The blaze has not been extinguished, however, and the service says it expects parts of the fire to continue burning into the fall. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
A series of powerful storms in the central and southern U.S. over the Memorial Day holiday weekend killed at least 22 people as they left a wide trail of destroyed homes, businesses, and power outages. The destructive storms caused deaths in the states of Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Kentucky, and were just north of an oppressive early season heat wave, setting records from South Texas to Florida. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
following a deadly Israeli attack on Rafah.
40 people, including small children, being burned. I condemn this in the stronger terms. It proves that there is no safe place in Gaza.
The U.S. commemorates Memorial Day.
And just as our fallen heroes have kept the ultimate faith with our country and our democracy, we must keep faith with them.
And it's National Hamburger Day in the U.S., a food made famous worldwide.
The idea for a cooked patty of ground beef originated in Hamburg, Germany. And years later, someone put the patty between two slices of bread.
Today is Tuesday, May 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. An Israeli airstrike triggered a fire that killed dozens of people in a tent camp in the Gazan city of Rafah, according to officials on Monday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the strike was not intended to cause civilian casualties and would be investigated. But condemnation was swift and global. EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell.
I want to insist. I issued a tweet early this morning about the horrifying news coming out of Rafah on Israeli strikes killing dozens of displaced persons. The last figure seems to be around 40 people, including small children, being burned. I condemn this in the stronger terms. It proves that there is no safe place in Gaza. And these attacks take place immediately after the International Court of Justice ordered it to stop all military activities in Gaza.
Colombia's Foreign Minister, Luis Gilberto Murillo.
Más países están apoyando la acción de Sudáfrica.
He's saying more and more countries support the International Court of Justice's lawsuit by South Africa. More and more countries support Palestine has full rights in the UN. Here's German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock.
Keine Geisel freikommt, wenn jetzt
she says no hostage will be freed if more people now have to shelter in tents. International law, international humanitarian law, applies to everyone, including Israeli warfare. Israel responded to the incident by saying,
civilian casualties are desperately sad, but this is the war Hamas wanted and started.
That's Israeli government spokesperson Avi Hyman. Spain, Ireland, and Norway intend to recognize the Palestinian state on Tuesday. The foreign ministers of the three held a news conference in advance of the diplomatic move.
The international community, including the European Union, have been talking about support for the two-state solution based on the 1967 borders for decades. But we are no nearer to actually getting to that desired end state. And we firmly believe that without changing our approach, we will never get there. Some have framed our decision as a move Our decision to recognize the state of Palestine is a move to impose an outcome on the parties, or as somehow a reward for terror. Nothing could be further from the truth. We have recognized both the state of Israel and the state of Palestine precisely because we want to see a future of normalized relations between the two peoples.
Irish Foreign Minister Michael Martin, Norwegian Foreign Minister Espen Barth Eide adding,
we encourage other countries to do the same. We know that a number of European countries are either on the way to do so or contemplating, and we hope they will follow suit. But the main point from our side was to send a strong signal into this process that we cannot just be stuck with the way we wanted to do this in the 1990s. We have to realize where we are. We are in 2024, and we need to upgrade this long-standing vision of a peaceful settlement in the Middle East, a Palestinian state living beside an Israeli state.
There were also protests around the world. In Paris, police and demonstrators clashed as officers fired tear gas and rushed the crowd. In Beirut, protesters near the Egyptian embassy chanting in support of Palestinians and condemning the attacks. Israel's military says it was investigating the strike. French President Emmanuel Macron urged Europeans to defend themselves better against enemies and not just rely on the U.S.
Nous devons bâtir ensemble.
He's saying together we must build a new concept of common security, and on this basis, and this basis alone, we must define the capabilities we need, the joint projects to be built, and the industrial, technological, and innovation projects to be built together as Europeans. Macron was in Dresden as part of his three-day official visit to Germany. We're following these other stories from around the world. North Korea said its attempt to launch a new military reconnaissance satellite ended in failure on Monday when a newly developed rocket engine exploded in flight. The Papua New Guinea government said more than 2,000 people are believed to have been buried alive in a landslide. The site of a mountain came down in the early hours of Friday morning when the village of Yambali was asleep. Russian forces have attacked Ukraine with about 3,200 guided aerial bombs this month. That's according to President Volodymyr Zelensky on Monday. Zelensky was in Madrid, where he said Ukraine needed at least 7 more Patriot launchers to defend itself and that he would pressure allies to get them. He is scheduled to be in Lisbon on Tuesday. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both campaigning for the support of black voters. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how the presidential campaigns are targeting African Americans.
Donald Trump told voters in New York that all Americans will benefit if he's elected.
It doesn't matter whether you're black or brown or white. Or whatever the hell color you are, it doesn't matter. We are all Americans, and we're going to pull together as Americans.
Joe Biden told civil rights leaders in Michigan that all Americans are represented in his cabinet.
We have more African Americans. We have more women. We have more minorities in our administration than any other administration in all of history. That's why we're doing so damn well.
Trump and Biden are both campaigning for the support of black voters. In an election where that may make the difference in swing states that could decide the outcome. Pew Research data shows the top electoral issues for black Americans in 2024 are improving education and strengthening the economy. Trump says he'll tackle both.
We're going to bring success back to our schools. We're going to bring prosperity back to every neighborhood and every borough of the greatest city in our land.
The Biden campaign's targeting black voters with this ad about Trump in New York.
Of course I hate these people.
Donald Trump disrespecting black folk is nothing new. He was sued for refusing to rent his apartments to black families and called for the execution of 5 innocent black and brown teenagers.
Biden says Trump is a vengeful candidate whose election would hurt minorities.
Trump isn't running to lead America. He's running for revenge. But revenge is no way to lead a country. You can't build a future on revenge. You can't build better lives through revenge. That's why I'm running to lead America into the future.
Immigration is a central theme in Trump's campaign, one he tailored to minority voters in the South Bronx.
African Americans are getting slaughtered. Hispanic Americans are getting slaughtered. And these millions and millions of people that are coming into our country, the biggest impact and the biggest negative impact is against our black population and our Hispanic population who are losing their jobs, losing their housing, losing everything they can lose.
Biden told black voters he needs them again to beat Trump.
You're the reason Donald Trump is the defeated former president. And you're the reason Donald Trump's going to be a loser again.
4 years ago, black voters chose Biden over Trump by 92%. As of last month, Pew Research data says that's down to 77% of black voters who would vote for or are leaning toward Biden, compared to 18% for Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
Thousands of households, shrimp farms, and river protection dams were flooded and damaged as Cyclone Remal swept across coastal Bangladesh on Monday. Villagers saying many people are marooned, the loss is immense. Strong gales and heavy rain cut electricity to millions before losing intensity. The cyclone is the first of the year of the frequent storms that have pounded the low-lying coasts of South Asia in recent years as climate change drives up surface temperatures at sea. International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. In Peru, the Chinese are building a mega port for sea ships, cargo ships, which they hope will become the gateway for Asian trade to the region. But as we hear now in this report from Adriana Nunez Rabiscal, local residents and security analysts say the economic benefit comes at a price.
Unrecognizable to Miriam Arce in just a few short years. She says the bay has stopped being a bay. It's completely covered and mutilated. Arce has lived in the community near Peru's new Chanque port her whole life. She says port construction is hurting the environment and the 20,000 families who live nearby as waste from the project ends up in the ocean. Arce says the fishing has disappeared and will disappear even more. The site where the port is being built is a place where the fish reproduce. Construction of this massive port in the city of Chanque, about 70 kilometers north of Peru's capital, Lima, is expected to finish by the end of the year. The goal, to make this the gateway for Asian trade in South America. Chinese state-owned enterprise Costco Shipping owns 60% of the $3.5 million port. A Peruvian company holds the remaining stake. Economist Pedro Maldonado says the port will consolidate China's trade leadership in Latin America and strengthen the commercial relationship it already has with the country. He says China has commercially displaced the U.S. as Peru's main trading partner since 2015. China's interest in Peru centers on the country's minerals and other raw materials, says economist Pedro Maldonado. He adds that of the $60 billion that Peru exports to the rest of the world, $20 billion goes to China, and most of the exports are minerals such as copper. Costco Shipping says this port will lower costs and reduce the transit time of goods from 30 days to 20 days. In an interview with reporters in January, Costco Shipping spokesperson Mario de las Casas said the port could handle 1 million containers a year. Peru is one of the leaders in agricultural production, he said, but it lacks the capacity to reach Asia. He hopes by the end of 2024, this port will provide that opportunity. China may also have other ambitions with this new port, says international relations professor Euclides Tapia. He says there's no doubt. If this port must fulfill a military function, it will fulfill it, period, because the Chinese Navy is also involved in the construction of the port. Tapia says China also seeks to consolidate its influence in Latin America by investing in key trade routes. He says there will be an umbilical relationship between China and Latin America, similar to what they're building on other continents, such as Africa and Southeast Asia. It's the same script, he says, of economic control and military influence. Costco Shipping has not responded to VOA's repeated requests for comment. Peruvian officials had granted Costco the exclusive right to run this megaport. Then earlier this year, they said they did not have the legal right to grant Costco the rights. As the dispute continues, so does construction as residents watch the landscape change. Elizabeth Lee for Adriana Nunez Rabascal, VOA News, Chanque, Peru.
Listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington. Still ahead, the history of the hamburger. Some of the last surviving World War II veterans will gather in Normandy, France next month, just a couple of days really, June 6th, to mark the 1944 Allied landings that began the country's liberation from Nazi German control. But another war on Europe's doorstep in Ukraine casts a dark shadow on this 80th anniversary of D-Day. Lisa Bryant reports from a small town on the Normandy coast.
This ancient town has weathered English invasions and the French Revolution. But what draws visitors to Carentan-les-Marais is the Second World War and the U.S. and other Allied soldiers who helped to end it. Sébastien Lenné, the town's deputy mayor, says a person coming here on the 80th anniversary of D-Day would see it's almost like the town's people are living in an American state. He says there are many American flags hanging from the windows to celebrate the peace they got back, and especially to say thank you to the veterans who come back this year and every year. This strategic port town was a prize for D-Day soldiers who landed on the Normandy beaches nearby. It took them 6 days to liberate Carentan from German occupiers. Agnès Sell's parents were teenagers at the time. She says they were very afraid. Even when the Americans landed, she says they didn't know what was going on because there were bombings. Today, Sel is focused on another conflict in Ukraine. She's helped some Ukrainian war refugees settle here. She says the war is at Europe's doorstep, so of course, she says, people are afraid. She says we need to stick together, the Americans and the Europeans. But memories of the solidarity that shined among the Allies on D-Day 8 decades ago are fading, and questions are growing about America's long-term commitment to its European partners and to Ukraine in its war against Russia. Brock Bierman heads an NGO called Ukraine Focus.
If we fail to support Ukraine's independence, what we could be looking at is a longer-term conflict in the next decade, which will involve boots on the ground and possible American lives lost.
Bierman is a former senior U.S. official in the Trump administration, serving as assistant administrator for Europe and Eurasia at the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. Today, his NGO organizes ambulances donated by Americans and Europeans for Ukraine's war effort. Bierman says after D-Day, the vehicles will head from this museum in Carentan, where they're now stationed, to Kyiv.
When we leave here, we're going to go to Paris. We're going to go through Munich. We're going to go through Bratislava. We're going to go through Vienna to get to Ukraine. And we're really excited about sending that message of hope and solidarity and alliance.
Nous sommes dans des temps perturbés.
Carentan's deputy mayor, Sébastien Lenné, says it's true we live in troubled times. The war, he says, is at Europe's door, less than 2 hours from Paris. He says it's important for people to be very vigilant, not just Europeans, but also their American allies, who help maintain what he says is a fragile peace. Lenné says the most important D-Day message is to remember. Millions of people died during World War II. It must not happen again. Lisa Bryant, VOA News, Carentan-les-Marais, France.
In the United States on Monday, it was Memorial Day. As is tradition, President Joe Biden honored fallen service members at Arlington National Cemetery's Tomb of the Unknown Soldier.
Our turn! Right shoulder!
I've long said we have many obligations as a nation. Our democracy is more than just a system of government. It's the very soul of America. It's how we've been able to constantly adapt through the centuries. It's why we've always emerged from every challenge stronger than we went in. And it's how we come together as one nation, united. And just as our fallen heroes have kept the ultimate faith with our country and our democracy, we must keep faith with them. The very idea of America endures.
It was the 156th observance of Memorial Day, which began a few years after the Civil War, in 1868, originally known as Decoration Day, a time to decorate the graves of fallen soldiers with flowers. it has now also sort of become the unofficial kickoff of summer, and many people celebrate by having a barbecue. Which brings us to the hamburger, a staple at barbecues on Memorial Day. Tuesday, it just so happens, is National Hamburger Day in the U.S. It's an American staple that has become a global phenom. It's believed to have been invented in the state of Connecticut at a restaurant called Lewis Lunch in 1895, when Lewis Lassen opened his lunch wagon. This small establishment, which advertises itself as the oldest hamburger restaurant in the U.S., is credited by some with having invented the classic American hamburger, when Lewis sandwiched a ground steak patty between two pieces of white toast for a busy office worker in 1900. The hamburger gave birth to the fast food industry after the world's first official burger chain, White Castle, was founded in 1921 in the American Midwest. But the company that truly made it a global staple was McDonald's, which today sells 75 hamburgers every second in its restaurants around the world. Approximately 1% of the world eats at McDonald's every day. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
May 24th marks 27 months since Russia began its invasion of Ukraine, the opening salvo in Vladimir Putin's heinous war of territorial conquest. That represents over 800 days of death, destruction, widespread devastation, and immense suffering for the Ukrainian people, said Izumi Nakamitsu, UN High Representative for Disarmament Affairs. She warned that any transfer of weapons and ammunition must take place within the applicable international legal framework. And predictably, as it has in the past, Russia again attempted to shift the blame for the war to Western nations for supplying Ukraine with the means to defend itself. Russia's pretense that it is assistance to Ukraine and not its own aggression that is prolonging the war is as disingenuous as it is cynical, said Robert Wood, United States Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs. Let's not forget who started this war.
Russia conveniently omits the fact that over 140 countries have repeatedly condemned its aggression against Ukraine and called for its immediate withdrawal from Ukraine's internationally recognized territory. We understand the omission because the fact is inconvenient. It doesn't fit Moscow's narrative that it is fighting the West. It doesn't fit Moscow's narrative that it is somehow the victim as it attempts to brutally subjugate another UN member state.
The fact is that Russia makes appeals to this council while it brazenly violates council resolutions, said Ambassador Wood. Since last December, Russian forces have used DPRK ballistic missiles to strike Ukraine nearly a dozen times. Russia also receives weapons from Iran and massive support from China.
Let me be clear. Russia could not sustain its war of territorial conquest without this support.
Finally, earlier this month, the United States imposed sanctions on Russia for its use of chemical weapons against Ukraine, said Ambassador Wood.
We assessed Russian forces use the chemical weapon chloropicrin and riot control agents as a method of warfare to dislodge Ukrainian forces from fortified positions. The United States condemns in the strongest possible terms the use of chemical weapons anywhere by anyone under any circumstances.
We urge all countries to cease their military cooperation with Russia, which goes towards supporting an illegal war of aggression against Ukraine, said Ambassador Wood. Until Russia ceases its attacks and withdraws from Ukraine, the United States will remain committed to providing Ukraine what it needs to defend itself, in accordance with Article 51 of the UN Charter.
That was an editorial reflecting the views